Conversations can be a source of frustration, but they can also be the source of our deepest and most fulfilling joys. The bonds that we form with others are forged in large part through conversation. In this episode, we'll talk about the key skill needed to have good conversations. I'm Sharif Yunus with Dr. Kevin Majors, and this is The Golden Hour. Our all-new online masterclass will give you all the tools needed to bring your highest ideals into each activity, whether work or conversation. In this four-week masterclass available on OptimalWork.com, Dr. Majors will guide you through all the key ideas of optimal work, with exercises provided to help you master them. Now let's get started. Hey, this is Sharif here with another episode of The Golden Hour, joined by Dr. Kevin Majors. Kevin, good to be here with you again.
Hey, Sharif, great to be here.
Well, Kevin, I think a lot of people who listen, and I am too, are interested in how to be a better friend, and then also how to help other people grow. And both of these involves having conversations. And we talk a lot about the centrality of relationships. So I thought maybe we could start to apply our theory to how to have good conversations. So, we talk about reframing mindfulness challenge. Do those help us have better conversations? Are there any other kind of frameworks that we can use? How do we think about this?
Well, this is a super important topic and one very dear to me because I do have conversations all the time. It's kind of what, as a psychiatrist, what you do for a living is you just have conversations. And I've been not necessarily always practicing the best things, but I have been at least trying to understand them really well and to get into what does it really mean to have a good conversation with someone? And I'm just going to throw this out there. I think the number one problem that we have is overthinking. So I think if you wanted to have a really good conversation with someone and you go into it and you're just like thinking and thinking and thinking, like as if having a conversation is like playing chess where you have to get exactly the right next move or the next step, or you have to be thinking of always what you're going to say next. No, I think if you're doing any of that, you're really not going to be present. So doesn't that seem fit with your experience that like it's possible to overthink in these things?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And especially when you're thinking while the other person's talking, that's like a disaster. So it seems like a very important thing is being there with the other person. That's almost, that has to be the basis for the conversation. If you're, it's not you there with another person kind of on an equal footing in some way. But if you're just kind of always thinking about what you want to say and yeah, I like the comparison with chess, that seeing conversations as something to win at, like it's a debate.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think a lot of people who are well-intentioned, you know, think that they have to win at conversations with people if they're going to somehow help other people. Mm-hmm. And somehow that doesn't really respect the real magic that happens in conversations, you know, which is there is something new that gets created, you know, like when you're having a conversation with someone and it starts going deeper. And I don't think that that can be pre-planned in any way. So I don't think that you could have possibly thought in advance what would be the opening to a really good conversation. So it does seem like there's a really important thing of being ready for one and being open for a deeper conversation all the time so that you can then see how to actually let a conversation go deeper, but not trying to think your way into it or plan your way into it or strategize your way into it. Mm-hmm. So I just think that that stuff doesn't really respect. There's something spontaneous. There's something shared in a conversation that always has to be respected.
And in your mind, does that apply also to these kind of mentoring conversations or you as a psychiatrist, the conversations that you have? I mean, it seems very easy for me to be thinking before the conversation, I know that so-and-so is going to be coming over for mentoring in a couple of minutes. So I want to spend a little bit of time thinking, okay, what's the main point that I want to make or the area where he needs help? I'm trying to like get the conversation to go in the direction where I can kind of make that point in the best possible way so that he can change. So that's kind of, I can see that that's not going along with what we're saying, but is there any difference with these types of mentoring conversations versus just a kind of friendly conversation?
Well, I think it's the same because there's an element of really like being present with the person that you're with. I think the danger that we have with friends and with mentees and with family members is that we stop experiencing the person and, you know, himself or herself. And we are really just interacting with our model of the person. Mm. So we kind of have predicted how they will react. We predict everything. And as a result, we are just less, we're not in the sense of being curious in a kind of discovery mode. You know, and well, if you don't have curiosity, how will you ask questions? Mm-hmm. And how will you experience anything new with the person? So it's like, how do you get to the point where you can experience new things with people? Well, so the danger is thinking that we know the direction in advance, particularly with like mentoring or therapy, that you know exactly the direction in advance. It might be that a whole new opportunity makes itself known. Perhaps there's a whole new challenge you discover that you didn't know the person had before. And if we had too much of a ready plan going into that, we just wouldn't be on the lookout. And so we could miss things. Now, if there's a really strong rapport, they'll try to make sure you don't miss things. But it's easy to happen, you know, that we just kind of thought we knew what was the most important thing going on, and turns out we didn't. That's how it puts it, like in a negative sense, but also that there could have been just something very exciting to talk about, something new in their life. And if we didn't like let them talk, then we would have never gotten to hear it and gotten to discover it. Mm-hmm. So there is an art of asking short questions, open-ended, and then really being able to listen.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, those are two things that we definitely want to dive into more of: the art of asking good questions and then the art of listening. So, I just to make a quick point about this too, I think it's interesting that when, you know, we talk a lot about the bond between people and think, how does that develop? And I think one way it develops is in conversations. And part of that is like the give and take of conversations. But then sometimes it's just, you don't even have to have a conversation. You can be hiking with someone. And even if you're not, if in some moments you're not talking or playing a sport, then, so it's not like conversations are always the only way to develop a bond. But then that kind of suggests that listening is a very powerful way conversation to develop a bond, I think.
Because nor are questions needed to have a good conversation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that you could imagine listening as a superpower. Sometimes I ask people this, you know, when I'm mentoring them, because it'll come up that people will say, how do I deepen my friendships? And I'll talk about the superpower of listening. And raised to the highest degree, listening is the doorway to deeper and deeper conversations. And I would want them to imagine what that looks like, even with no questions being asked at all. Now, that might not be realistic, but it's worth thinking about. Could you imagine having a power of listening that was so intense that you could forge deep conversations and friendships with the pure power of listening alone? I like thinking about that because that's precisely the question in you know, that Barbara Euland, in this beautiful piece on listening, I wanted to quote, I think she wrote this, I don't know, it was in the 80s, but she has this kind of mystical notion of listening that she says, I think it's only by expressing all that it is inside that purer and purer streams come. And so it is in writing. She says, you're taught in school to put down on paper only the bright things. Wrong. Pour out the dull things on paper too. You can tear them up afterwards, for only then do the bright ones come. And so she talks about people then who have not been listened to in the right way, with the kind of affection and cheerfulness, that somehow their creative, like this inner fountain of their being has been blocked up just because they didn't have people like were there to listen to them. And she talks about what happens when, you know, with people who are very brilliant, that they can be entertaining but exhausting because they are just lecturers in conversations and they're brilliant performers. But without giving us a chance to talk, they don't let us express our thoughts and expand and grow. Because there's something that happens when we make our own discoveries and we're saying things out loud and we're hearing it. You know, there might be a lot about the Freudians I don't agree with, you know, but one thing they got right was the importance of listening to people so that they just sit there and listen throughout the whole session. And they might not say anything the entire time. Okay. And there is actually a power just in listening to people that then they start to develop. And she says that there's this little creative fountain within us that begins to spring and cast up new thoughts and new, you know, ideas and wisdom and laughter. And that when someone has really listened to you deeply, you go home rested and lighthearted. Mm-hmm. She also talks beautifully about how, have you ever noticed that when you know people will laugh at your jokes, you know, that you just become funnier and funnier? But that if you know that they don't laugh, every little funny thing in you just shrivels up and dies. It's a really powerful thing, though, that when you're around good friends, the joking and the laughing just happens so naturally. And she says it's like an alternating current that keeps charging itself because you can talk to friends endlessly. Yeah, it's like you don't run out of things to talk about. You know, I think with family, it can be a little bit different because you're around them all the time. You know, and so you have to be looking for your ways of recharging that. But ordinarily, there's just so much give and take, and the other person's interest just creates us in a sense. It just brings out the best in us continually. I think that's a very powerful thing to try to tap into, this power of helping to bring out the best in others simply by listening deeply to them. Mm-hmm.
So then what are we kind of aiming at when we're approaching a conversation like that? It seems like we're no longer aiming to, whereas previously we might have been aiming to get a person to think about something in a certain way, yeah, or to believe a certain thing or to do a certain thing. Now we're just more open to the person. And so it's almost like left brain, right brain. Like in the left brain, you're trying to manipulate or control or like get someone to do something. But here we're just open to them. And that's
yes.
It. And so the whole goal of the conversation is just deepening the bond with the person.
I think there's a real truth to the difference between the thinking mind and the mm-hmm. observing mind. And that the thinking mind is basically left-brained. And it's always, there's just running on words and working within its model and planning out the next thing it's going to say or making chess moves. That's just what the thinking mind does. I think that that is the obstacle to deep conversations because it's going to lead you to want to lecture to people. Now, I'm totally, of course, this is like, you know, something I have to work on, you know, that it's easy to want to lecture to people and you have all these yeah. interesting things to say. But the problem is if you do that, it's at the expense many times of actually making bonds with people. Mm-hmm. So when you're with those that you're closer to or wanting to be closer to, you can't be lecturing them. You know, you actually have to be sharing, you know, giving and taking and attending. And if there's something, and so I think that really the left brain wants to focus on the words being said in the conversation. The right brain is more tuned in. It's the observing mind. It's tuned into the bond. It's tuned in more to the mutual shared attention itself, you know, and how to keep that going. And I think that the right brain is just much more comfortable in silence. It is silence. When you're totally silent in your head, you're just using the right brain. Mm-hmm. And that's what you need. When you're listening to people, you're focusing on being with them, not doing a conversation with them, but it's being with them. And you're focused entirely on getting, you know, out of your mind, out of yourself, and just to be united to the other person for a moment. And that doesn't have to take a long time. It could even happen when you're at the cashier in a store. But it's just the power of connecting in a conversation, I think, is so linked to the kind of quantity of inner silence you carry within you. And if you have a deep inner silence within you, you're always in ready to listen to other people. But if you have constant noise within you, you're just not available when the others then show up and it's hard to then actually connect to them. Mm.
Yeah, that's a really deep insight. And then it connects, I think, to the next question that I wanted to raise, which is about pauses, because we've talked a little bit about this before, mm-hmm. and you kind of really surprised me with this fact that you can pause for extended lengths of time, just listening and waiting for the person to say something next. That oftentimes when we're in conversations, when a pause comes, we think, okay, now here's my chance. I can finally say what I've been waiting to say this whole time. But you're saying the opposite, that when those pauses come, you just let the pause happen and then you wait and then they, and then let them continue as the pause is them collecting their thoughts so that they can kind of reorient and keep going. But you're cutting that off.
I think that's exactly one of the toughest skills to practice in conversations. Is how do you respect pauses coming from other people and not jump in, but let the pause mature? That pause is, in a sense, where this mystical creating is taking place. Mm-hmm. There can be, in those moments of pause, a kind of enkindling, you know, that where that you are just communicating to them, I am here and I'm open. I have endless time. It's like what you're saying. If you could communicate that with your body, it's better to do that too. That your body language, everything says relax, endless time. And then when there's a pause, you don't tense up like you're about to say something. You just stay relaxed, stay open, be smiling. You could like lean in, you know, a bit, but you're just giving them, you know, a second. And then another second. And I think the power of silence increases exponentially. So the more is like the next second is like even more powerful. And the next second, oh, it's unbearably powerful. You know, and then they will speak. And after a person reinitiates speaking after a pause, I think you have gotten to a deeper level of conversation. And then you can continue that for a bit. And then there's a pause and it goes down one level deeper. And then the next pause, one level deeper. So I think this just happens ordinarily, you know, that by we test our interlocutor by pausing. And if they don't show interest or encouragement, then we shy away and change the topic. It's just what polite people do. So I'm thinking this is just like the normal thing in conversation, that people go deeper with pauses. Mm-hmm. And it's, like it's really hard to practice.
Yeah, it's like the pause is where trust is built. In the silence, it's like that's exactly where trust is. Yeah, but yeah, I was trying to practice this, and I paused, and after about a second and a half, I almost started laughing because I realized I'd never really done this before, and it was just kind of, I felt like, yeah, it was kind of uncomfortable and felt weird.
Yeah, it's a whole. It's funny practice. How powerful it is. Yeah, and it doesn't take much time. I think that average pauses in the conversation might be like a quarter of a second or, mm-hmm. you know, half a second. Supposedly in the research, the longest pause that Americans can tolerate is 4 seconds.
Yeah.
And then it becomes very awkward. And so you don't want to go too long, I guess. But they say that other cultures like the Japanese supposedly can handle 8-second pauses. But that's just ordinary in their conversation. Now, these are... Mm-hmm. I'm sure that, you know, when you're dealing with people that you live with and, you know, people that, you know, if you have dinner with them every single night, well, there might be pauses that are longer, they're not awkward at all.
Yeah.
I'm talking here mostly about like with friends or even like in a mentoring situation or coworkers to actually give people a chance to follow up on their own pause. It's like, how many times with a cashier have you ever tried doing that? Mm-hmm. If they say something and there's a pause and you let them continue, it's just extremely rare. I think we can, it's almost like silence echoes eternity. It's like endless time. And when you're just being totally internally and externally silent, you convey endless time. It's like, I have all the time you need. And that's just powerful but if we're somehow loud in our own mind, that's going to show in ways we'll never pick up on, but it's going to show in our body language and the way we move and all these things. Somehow it's going to be communicated. So I think that to keep the body truly still, you need the mind to be still, which is what silence is. So stillness of the body and silence in the mind go together. And that's how you convey your availability. I'm interested, I'm open. And if they don't, well, fine, you're not going to force it. You can then follow it up with something. And sometimes you have to give a little more cues that you're interested in something. Mm-hmm. I think it's also very important just with like parents and their children. We've talked about parent-child interactive therapy. PCIT in different podcasts, where the parents basically spend 5 minutes a day not like talking to the kid, not questioning or giving any directions, just playing with them, mirroring what they do, maybe commenting a little bit. Oh, it looks like you're putting the block there and you're doing this. But you just try to keep it so minimal, but just be there ready for them. You know, and I think that this is a similar kind of practice, you know, of what it means to really bond in a conversation. Because many times we're really constantly taking control of conversations and trying to direct them our way, you know, mm-hmm. or we were just looking for an audience. You know, I think this happens particularly as men get older, that they tend to lecture and to talk about the things, you know, that they're super interested in, and to mm-hmm. They have a much harder time really listening to their family and their friends. Yeah. And it becomes tiring then when you're around them, because they're not able to listen. It's like even giving a talk to an older audience of men, you know, that they don't convey listening with their facial expressions. Mm. But if you're giving a talk to younger groups, you know, men and women, you know, you see the active listening taking place, that people are like following what you're saying and they're nodding and they smile every once in a while, and it can't be faked. Mm-hmm. That's like, so in talks, people do this very often naturally, but often it's harder for people who, I don't know, with just a lot more experience, to stay so open to hearing new things, mm-hmm. you know, and to convey that with active listening. I mean, clearly people of any age can have a hard time listening. I'm not trying to say this is just something that any particular group has, you know, but I think it's that the more we have accumulated a lifetime of interesting things and things that fascinate us, and we want to share those with other people, that can sometimes be great, but can sometimes be at the expense of really just, putting, you know, being open to the other person, which is what I'm trying to emphasize here. That I think listening is a superpower, you know, and I think to draw people out, even if you can't see the way it's going to help them to grow, it ends up revealing, I think, the deeper ways that people grow. It will naturally happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we can't really underestimate the power of listening. And this kind of relates to then, I want to get to the flip side of it too, because we have only a little bit of time left. But when we're trying to convey our perspective, because, you know, it can't just be that every single conversation you have with a certain person, you're just always listening the whole time.
Yeah.
And you never really say anything. So at some point, it's kind of your turn to then
yes.
show trust mm-hmm. in the other person and share. But it seems like it's easy to get caught at the conceptual level of just, but not really then sharing kind of your way of being with the other. It's not, you're not being sincere or open. So I was wondering if you had any thoughts on that. I just had one thought that came to mind in that regard. It was like, mm-hmm. when someone asks you why you believe something, I think it's common that you go to the reasons, like the logical reasons for why you believe stuff. As opposed to, oh, well, I read this book and they said this and that got me thinking about this. It's like more common that you, not to give like the historical, like grounded in reality for why you believe a certain thing, but it's just giving the logic, like you want to prove the other person wrong to win the argument in a sense. So anyway, yeah, I was just wondering if you could give some thoughts on kind of how to develop that sincerity in conversation so that, you know, the other person can listen well to you.
Well, it gets to the idea of like, when you're listening to someone, what are you listening for? Are you trying to see their errors so you can correct them? Mm-hmm. And then you give them the logical argument. You know, are you trying to, you know, assess somehow like their beliefs, their motives? I don't think any of that is really what you're listening for. I think what you're really listening for is like, what are the challenges they're facing? Mm-hmm. You know, and then you open up about the challenges you face too. And particularly if there is something similar there, or that this is how you've like learned how to really, that kind of challenge can bring out the best in you. You know, and this is how you've been like switching how you think about it. And that when I started shifting my attitude in this way and making discoveries, you know, and then I started shifting my attention here, and this is kind of what I did. I think that actually is when you share your experience, your own life, and the challenges you face and how you went about kind of trying to address them, now you're giving them a much more powerful kind of blueprint than a simple argument. I mean, that debates in conversations are almost always useless. Because if you're trying to like convince someone to come to your mm-hmm. side with this those kind of arguments, I just think that that's not how people really tend to change their beliefs. Mm-hmm. But when they can see that, wow, some person faced the same challenges, you know, and this is kind of how he or she addressed it. Well, maybe I can try that too. You know, and what would it be like to actually believe this? What would be the experience of that belief be like? You know, that you can't like that puts your beliefs on people, but you can share your experiences of those beliefs with people. What is it like to experience this kind of belief? So, and to share that experience too, you know, so just because that was the way that you found to best address that kind of challenge. Mm-hmm. So no, this is all speaking in like at some very meta level of, you know, being, you know, detached from anything specific. But I think that's actually how we best help people is this is, you know, like what's the wisdom that we've acquired over the years based on the challenges we've been through. And the more you can share those challenges, I think the more bond can form.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, Kevin, I think that's an awesome note to end on, like super practical and helpful. So, if, I don't know if you have any final thoughts you want to add.
Okay, I have one final thought.
Okay, I'll give it one final thought.
Which is something that you mentioned, which that the pauses are where the bond really develops. I think that's exactly right. And I think that then in those snapshots, you actually see listening at its deepest level, which is listening is silent love. So it's when you're silent and listening, you're loving. And so if you can try to practice that in conversations, to have this attitude of silent love towards the person, you know, but especially persevering that in the pauses that occur, I think that's what then kind of enkindles these really deeper conversations and gives them a kind of new, even kind of mystical life. But mm-hmm. anyway, that's the final thought there. Listening is silent love.
That's great. Yeah, it's less glamorous, but it's more fulfilling.
Exactly.
Great. Well, Kevin, thanks so much for sharing all these insights with us.
Thank you, Sharif.
And we'll be back next week. Well, thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Don't forget to check out optinwork.com for a set of online tools to help you engage challenge in your life. See you next week.